For this part of the show, I usually choose a particular subject and do a few minutes on it. This morning, we want to talk about fluoride. It's been in and out of the news, gosh, for 30 years that I know of, but there's some new studies that I think is worth bearing out and thinking about. Water fluoridation has been hailed as the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as one of the top great public health achievements of the 20th century. But a new study raises questions about its role as a potential neurotoxin in utero. The study, published in the journal JAMA Pediatrics, which means the Journal of American Medical Association's Pediatrics, on Monday, found that increased levels of fluoride exposure during pregnancy were associated with declines in IQ in children. Previous research has made similar findings, but this is the first such study to evaluate the effect of fluoride on populations receiving what the United States Public Health Service considers optimal levels of 0.7 milligrams of fluoride per liter of drinking water, the base used in the United States and in Canada. The authors of the new study assessed 601 Canadian mother and children pairs, tracking the fluoride exposure of 512 mothers by looking at the average concentration of fluoride in urine samples taken throughout their pregnancies as a proxy for prenatal fluoride exposure. The authors also estimated the mother's daily fluoride intake by surveying their beverage intake, including tap water. Between the ages of 3 and 4, all children born from the study mothers were tested for IQ. They found that for each additional 1 milligram per liter in concentration of fluoride in a mother's urine, there was a 4.5 drop in the IQ, especially of male children. The study did not find such a significant association in female children, nor did it examine why boys were more significantly affected. The researchers say the further investigation of whether boys are more vulnerable to fluoride neurotoxicity is needed, especially considering that boys have a higher prevalence of neurodevelopment disorders such as autism and attention deficit disorder. The researchers also measured the fluoride intake of 400 of the mothers against the child's IQ scores. They say this measure might reflect postnatal exposure to fluoride because a child is probably ingesting the same type of water as their mother is during the pregnancy. The authors believe that urine concentration better reflects prenatal exposure. They found that for every 1 milligram per liter of average increase in fluoride intake by a mother, there was a 3.7 drop in the child's IQ, regardless of gender. At a population level, that's a big shift. That translates to millions of IQ levels lost. Kristen Till, an associate professor in the Department of Psychology, stated at New York University in Toronto. Till and her colleagues controlled their findings for income and education, as well as other elemental exposures such as lead, mercury, manganese, PFOA, and arsenic, but acknowledged that there may be unknown exposures that could have influenced the findings. There will always be things we don't measure because we didn't know it existed, Till said. Fluoridation remains a contentious issue. Critics pointed to the difference between boys and girls as an issue in the study. The gender difference in the results make it difficult to interpret. At this point, the gender difference is problematic, said Dr. Aparna Bowl, chairman of the American Academy for Pediatrics Council on Environmental Health. Bowl said that this research alone wouldn't change any of the organization's recommendations to use fluoride to prevent cavities, but I think the study is well done and that the commentary was thoughtful. Grineen McElnon, professor of translational neuroscience at King's College in London, said that while the findings were statistically significant, not too much could be made of them in a practical sense. About 66% of all U.S. residents receive fluoridated water, but water fluoridation has been contentious since it was implemented by local municipalities back in the 50s. That's due to health concerns that were just hadn't been studied at the time. Questions about water fluoridation have at times been considered fringe science by some, and the editor of the board of JAMA recognized that publishing the paper could invite some controversy. In an editor's note, journal editor Dr. Kritakis, director of the Center for Child Health, Behavior, and Development at Seattle's Children's Research Institute wrote that the journal was committed to disseminating the best science based entirely on the rigor of the methods and the soundness of the hypothesis tested, regardless of how contentious the results may be. David Billinger, a professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School, wrote that the findings still need to be replicated and that no one study by itself should determine the safety and efficacy of fluoride. But he added, these considerations notwithstanding, the hypothesis that fluoride is a neurodevelopment toxicant must now be given serious consideration. In response, Dr. Pamela Den Besten, a professor in the University of California, San Francisco School of Dentistry, said, fluoride remains a safe and effective tool for caries prevention. Den Besten has studied the role of fluoride in fluorosis, a condition that results from excessive exposure to fluoride. However, she also noted that fluoride is the most effective in topical applications and added that, and I quote, my bias, given the findings of this and other studies to focus on the delivery of fluoride through strategies that do not require the fluoride to be ingested in everybody's water. She added that it wouldn't be unreasonable for pregnant women to use lower bottled, non-fluoridated water during pregnancy instead of tap water. In a statement, the ADA, American Dental Association, said, we welcome this and further scientific study of the issue to see if findings can be replicated with methods that demonstrate more conclusive evidence. Well, that was sort of the end of the article that came out this past week about fluoride, but I got a little bit curious because it left everything up in the air. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it not? So I decided to go and look for some papers that were directly from the folks involved, and I'm going to quote a little bit of one of them. It's a Dr. Hardy Limeback. He's got a bunch of stuff behind him. He's a BSc, he's a PhD, he's an actual dentist, and he's been studying fluoride for, well, over a decade, 12 years. I might mention that he's with the Harvard School of Medicine and Public Health, so he should have some credence about what he has to say. And it's is fluoridated drinking water safe? An article in the Harvard Public Health. Okay, so here's some returns from him that puts a little bit of meat behind it. A few of the things that he pointed out. Number one, fluoride from water fluoridation accumulates in bones in adults to undesirably high levels over time. Number two, fluoride intakes at low daily doses changes tooth dentin. That means the inside of your teeth, folks. Fluoridation causes dental fluorosis in children, especially those who are fed infant formula made with fluoridated water. One more. Dental fluorosis is irreversible damage to the teeth at moderate levels of which is aesthetically objectionable and undesirable, if not unhealthy. It costs families untold amounts of extra dental expense to treat the objectionable fluorosis, which many studies have recently shown has increased by at least one in every 10 children in the United States that are drinking fluorinated water in recent times. And then one more response from the doctor. Dental fluorosis is a sign that fluoride at low daily intakes has harmed not only the teeth, but also the tissues that are susceptible to the effects, for instance, bones. It has been found to be associated with lower IQ of 5 to 6 points in children. Well, I guess for my 2 cents worth, which I always add, these are, remember, my opinions, although I do quote from, I always consider sources that have at least been tested, sources that have gone through some study, not just that somebody decides to write on the internet these days. But what my conclusion would be that there's not a real reason to take the danger of using fluoride, even if it's in your water system, folks, especially if you're a lady that's going to get pregnant or you've got small children you're raising, invest in a RO and a reverse osmosis system. It has been tested in reverse systems. RO systems do remove over 90% of all fluoride and a number of other things that could be in your water that's not really that great for you. And they're not that expensive anymore. You can buy them. You don't have to go. You can go to Culligan and some of the people that sell them, and they'll put them in for you, and they do a fine job. But there are really good systems available now. You can put them in. It's a minimal plumbing job. Anybody that can put a faucet on can add an RO reverse osmosis system to their home. And you can buy them, I don't know if they have them here at True Value, but if they don't, they can get them, number one. Number two, certainly a trip to either a Home Depot or a Lowe's or anything like that. They have them in stock all the time. It's a three-hose setup. It's not very difficult to do, and it does indeed remove the question of whether your kids or you or you ladies that are pregnant are going to get pregnant have a problem with fluoridated water. There are studies that show that countries that don't ever use fluoridated water have just as low of a caries or a cavity problem as we do here in America, and they do not fluoridate their water. So it makes me question if the fluoride, the possible dangers of it or the possible problems with it is worth the effort of using it. Thanks for tuning in on Saturday mornings here to Organic Matters on KVLF in Alpine, Texas. And we'll be back after these messages.